Well, good morning. It's WMFO Medford. It's just about to turn 9:02 on a Saturday, a cold Saturday morning, September. No, it's not September. It's February 2nd. Last week, I came on the air and I wished my supposedly niece happy birthday, but I called her nephew. So this is what I do.
It's called... Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, Mark and Les are here.
It's called early onset. What is it? Actually, maybe I have it too.
I got something. I mean, there's so many things wrong with me.
Yeah. Quick, Mike. Les who?
Les Mark Hurwitz.
Very quickly.
The Hurwitz brothers, actually.
Yeah, something like that.
Actually, you're not brothers. You're cousins. No, you're not cousins. You're father and son.
Father and son.
Guess which one is which?
Isn't that a song?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
isn't
it
that
is.
Cat Stevens?
Cat Stevens.
Oh yeah.
Where for when?
Yeah,
I don't know, but we're all here, whoever we are.
Yep,
and we're here till 11 a.m. until something about the women comes in. Hey, you know, I know it's not going to be Sue that's going to be here today because she's like across the pond.
She's in Amsterdam.
She is.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so jealous.
She's been posting a lot of pictures already.
Yeah, I went there when I was a wee lad, which was quite a while ago, and what a wonderful trip to take. But she'll be here with me on February 23rd, 4 hours, 9 to 1, she and I, taking over the airwaves. We've never done that before.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's not... Just the two of you? No one else? Just
We're going to lock the door.
And it'll be a mix of something about the women and Freeform?
Yeah. Can you picture that?
That's going to be
great. Draw it out right now.
I might have to call in for a request.
I don't know. Well, we may shut the phones off, too. Just barricade the entire thing.
Kind of like Good Morning Vietnam?
Sort of like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyway, welcome to WMFO Medford. We broadcast very close to here, like Medford, Boston area, terrestrially on 91.5 FM. We're also worldwide, WMFO.org, so Sue and Cheryl could hear us.
Yeah, so we're extraterrestrial.
We are extraterrestrial. That was good.
Thank you. Hey, you know... Sometimes they come up with a good one, but not usually.
So Mark Hurwitz is here today. He'll have some industry news in the food industry for Boston and New England. And you picked a 5-song set as well that we'll do in the 10 o'clock hour.
Yep.
I just poked myself with a fake pencil.
Uh-oh.
Ooh.
And Les.
Want me to take over?
Let me just move. Sure. Move around a little bit.
Okay.
And Les is here. Les is our favorite musicologist. And
the only one, you say.
The only one. But still, that would make you the favorite. And I don't know what you're going to do today. So you want to just give us a short little synopsis of what your plans might be?
Well, very quickly, it'll be dealing, circling around the word imagery and how it applies to both classical and pop music. So you'll be hearing both forms of the music today.
That's very good. And Mark's going to handle the production?
I will be doing the production. Hopefully, I won't make a fool out of myself.
Well, you have a brand new device there.
I have an iPad Pro, which is one of the greatest inventions
ever.
It's
so impressive.
It's like a laptop and a mobile, whatever. You know, what do you call the iPad? What is it?
Is
there a name for it?
Yes, I know what you're looking for, and I can't think of it.
But it's kind of like a computer. I mean, you can set it up where you can... It has a real keyboard.
I was going to say it's called a pad. No, it's not. What's it called?
I don't know. No one cares, actually.
See, what's wrong with me? I don't know nieces from nephews or anything else.
I don't know.
But I do know Bob Mould. His new record, Sunshine Rock, is coming out this month. And I played a couple of things from there, and I've got a new one here called Lost Faith. That was a radio segue, by the way. And
that was a good one.
Yeah, and this song is all about, you'll hear, it's like about borders and dissent and all that kind of stuff. It's called Lost Faith. Brand new from Bob Mould, who's so cool here at WMFO Medford.
Many ways to hurt myself. Lost again, lost again.
I'm not afraid to die. is more like it.
You're listening to WMFO Medford.
9:26 in the morning here at WMFO Medford. I'm Mike. How are you? That's Mark and that's Les.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning.
They're here and they're very happy to be here. I'll just speak on their behalf. Yep. So we just played a 5-song set. Let me tell you what we did. There was some brand new noise from Bob Mould. It is Mould, not
it's
Mould.
It's Bob Mould. Some people say Bob Mould.
I do.
But no, you know, I'm pretty sure it's Bob Mould.
Okay, so Bob
At
Mould.
Least Alexis says that.
Just if it's pronounced the way it's spelled as a word, it's Mould.
Although it's, you know, Gould Street in Arlington, it's Gould, not Gold.
But you know what?
Actually, the truth is that absolutely nobody out there cares about
this. Well, what
about
the Moog synthesizer? But everybody, is that Moog or Moog? Yeah, M-O-O-G.
Yes would be the answer to that. People do
Thank
it.
You.
Yes.
Thanks for nothing.
Why don't we just say the guy from...
Husker Du.
Yeah, I was going to say Husker Du.
So let me just say Bob Mould or Mould just started everything off. Brand new release called Sunshine Rock. The entire record's coming out this month. That was called Lost Faith. Joy Division, classic from Joy Division, 1987 Substance CD is Transmission. That's for Lisa Menadou.
And a little side, I was going to say side dish.
Yeah, I wonder, why would you do that?
A little sidebar. Dave Penzel, the drummer from Tribe. Tribe. I was going to say Husker Du or Bob Mould.
Or Husker.
Dave and I, actually, we go way back, not to be a name dropper, but Dave and I used to work together in publishing. And couldn't meet a nicer guy. He lives in Vermont now, having a good life up there, skiing a lot. And that was an amazing band. I mean, they briefly made it nationally, and I thought they were going to last forever, but they didn't.
I know. Glowbox, Boston's own Glowbox. I saw them last night. They did a taping at Milford TV that'll be released on YouTube soon. What a great local power pop rock and roll band. That was The Window from their first record that came out in 2015. Tribe, the aforementioned Tribe from 1991's Abort CD. That was Joyride. And special guests, Al Petrulis's band, special guests. That was Al singing live quite a few years ago, covering Hey Joe. And very happy to play that for you, Al. And I'm going to play another special guest, well, sort of a hybrid special guest called the Dread Sox, a song called Tom, Tom, Tom. I wonder who that would be about, considering what tomorrow would be.
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Tom Warner?
Yeah.
Probably
yeah,
not.
So we're going to do one new noise here that Mark Hurwitz picked, but before that, Mark is going to read a public service announcement.
And one that I know much about.
Mm-hmm.
It's about walking.
Mm-hmm.
Although other physical activities can provide a more vigorous workout, walking is easy, requires no special equipment, and it's good exercise for most adults. In urban areas, walking can be an excellent alternative to driving or even taking public transportation. For example, Mike, did you know that it's just a little over 2.5 miles from the Tufts campus in Medford, where we are?
Of course I knew that.
To Harvard Square in Cambridge, a distance that can be walked in about 45 minutes by a healthy adult until they go to the new milk bar and they eat about 5 pounds of cake. Sorry, that's not part of the PSA.
That was not part of what you're supposed to do.
That's something I'll mention a little later about the milk bar. Okay. But anyways, walking can get you fresh air, exercise, burn calories, save you money, and with all the inattentive and otherwise impaired drivers on the road, it's safer than riding a bike. That was a public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Community Radio.
Mark Hurwitz, everybody.
Hey,
nobody can.
Thank you very much.
Nobody can control him. He's out of control.
Oh, apps all the time.
Thank you, Mark. All right, so this new noise is by a beer. I was going to say a beer.
Beer
but it's really a band called Deer Tick.
I do like Beer Ticks.
Yeah, and you picked this song. It's brand new from these guys.
Yeah, Pride and Joy of Providence, Rhode Island.
Yeah, yeah. Seen them many times at Newport Folk Festival. It's called Blues Boy, and you'll see why once I push this button right here. It's new noise at WMFO right after this. Les Hurwitz coming up. Nowadays, I just sit there tracing WMFO, Medford. Wow, what a good song there from Deer Tick. That was awesome.
It reminded me of the Yardbirds a little bit. It's weird.
They're very different every time, and I say it a lot. I love bands that do that.
Because a lot of their music, to me, it's like The Replacements or Tom Petty. But that song was definitely, it felt like Yardbirds or even, Del Fuego's little.
Yeah, actually.
You know? Yeah.
But what is up with that the band name? What is the Deer Tick?
Deer Tick?
Yeah.
You know what? I actually read a story about that. I think someone actually got bitten by a deer tick, and they decided, hey, that's a great name as they're lying in bed at the hospital. It's like, oh, let's call ourselves Deer Tick.
Thanks for crystallizing my thoughts on that.
Good thing they didn't get eaten by a lion or something.
I know. Then they'd call it, like, eaten by a lion.
Yeah, that's true.
So that didn't happen.
Yeah, good thing.
Okay, so, let me just, 2019 brand new record called Mayonnaise. That was Blues Boy. Love Deer Tick. And, you know, we have a surprise now with Les Hurwitz because I had written in the write-up for the show that I didn't know what Les would do, but I lied because I knew what he would do. And it's one of my favorite pianists, one of everybody's favorite pianists. And that's all I'm going to say. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Les Hurwitz.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Favorite composer is generally what George Gershwin is considered. You know, it's 100 years, 100 years since Gershwin started coming in. Well, he came into the picture a little less than 100 years ago, but I'll talk about it in a moment. The subject about which or around which I will deal is the word imagery. And, of course, right away the word imagery conjures pictures. But just think, the mind's imagery setup. We deal with sights and sounds, or sights or sounds. I did an arts history class at one time called Sights and Sounds, because that's what it's all about. It's either sights or sounds or both. And the word imagery, as it's conjured by the great geniuses, is about what I'm going to talk. I'm going to start, though, with a composition we all know, and from there I will start discussing the word imagery as it applies to whatever I'm doing. You're going to hear a composition by George Gershwin, but you're going to hear not only his music, but you're going to hear, probably for the first time for a lot of you, Gershwin as a pianist. He was one heck of a pianist. And as a matter of fact, I've got some video at home, some rare video of Gershwin rehearsing girls in a dance aspect of one of his Broadway reviews, probably back in the early 30s. I can't get the date on this thing. And it shows Gershwin shirt sleeves and sitting down and pounding on a spinet. He was a confrontational kind of pianist. I mean, he was not a great musician as a pianist, but he was a wonderful pianist and confronted the piano. Now, you're going to hear him confront the piano by way of his performance of one of the great tunes he wrote, which is I Got Rhythm. I mean, everybody comes along with that. You know, there's a question about Gershwin that's so wonderfully answered, which was last August, and I'll bring this up right now. Almost 100 years ago, when Gershwin was a young man, and one of his close friends, Oscar Levant, who was a very well-known pianist, and he was a great humorist. I discussed Oscar Levant in a program perhaps a year or so ago, and they were very close friends. And Oscar Levant, as a humorist, had quite an answer to a question. George Gershwin's question to Oscar was, 100 years from now, do you think my music will still be heard? And without looking up, Oscar Levant said, yeah, if you're still around. But that was Oscar Levant. The point is, the question was answered wonderfully well August 4th of last year, which was Tony Bennett's birthday. And on that birthday date, August 4th, Tony Bennett came out with his latest video, 92 years old. And he sings nothing but Gershwin. So there's your answer right there. Gershwin is a forever. He's like a Mozart. He's like a Beethoven. He will be here. We hear his songs all the time in so many incarnations. Before I get into the word imagery as it will apply to the music, the music you're going to hear, just listen to, because you may not hear him again. Gershwin play, this was in an opening of a theater, I believe it was called the Manhattan Theater in New York. In 1931, his piano version, after a concert with some of his music, of I Got Rhythm. Here's George Gershwin playing his own. Try to remember this one, Gershwin playing his own music, and you could see, or I should say hear, well, you can see, this is on YouTube, as I recall, Gershwin playing his own music, and he was a very fine pianist. There was no question about it. Now the word imagery comes into being. You're going to hear I Got Rhythm again. This time you're going to hear the vaunted genius, a pianist whom Horowitz thought was at least his equal. Horowitz, arguably as powerful a pianist in concert work, classical music, coming out of the 20th century, he admired, openly admired, the pianistic abilities of Art Tatum. We talked about this at other times. They established a relationship and everything. Now, Tatum, as a pianist, created such imagery in his improvisations around the tunes he played. He was able to, I look at it from the viewpoint of imagery as mentally a road that, and by the way, I think all of us build our own roads and we simply go down that road and no one else can be on that road. It's a road that we ourselves form. In the case of a genius, such as Art Tatum, his road, he could see so far ahead on the road, metaphorically, actually, in his case, I believe, he could actually see all the way down the road and know exactly what he was going to do, and it created in milliseconds so many sounds that were totally controlled. Never the same. If he played the same piece 12 times, it would be somewhat different each time. That is the art of improvisation, which leads to that cryptic headline in the New York Times that Horvitz once remarked. Can you imagine the great pianist Horvitz remarking, I wish I could play like Art Tatum? And when people actually saw that, they said, what is he talking about? And it seems to me, in terms of interpretation, what Horvitz was saying is that he wished he could be as free with the music in the classical sphere, all of which is note for note, you play what is written. But Art Tatum did not see. He was blind, remember. Number one. Number two, you don't write jazz improvisation unless you want to freeze it. And so it's never the same. It's never written. That is in its inception. Extemporization or this sort of situation we call, improvisation is something that Tatum was unexcelled in. No one has ever equaled him. We hear, let's say I Got Rhythm has about 16 chords. Each chord is either three or four notes in number played simultaneously. That's a harmony. Harmony chord are the same notation. And upon the harmony, the melody is pouncing. And when we hear a man like Tatum taking these chords, let's say 18 chords plus another 8 to finish off the tune, let's say, and playing hundreds or even thousands of notes of patterns that come out of what we would call imagery, all in milliseconds, so fast that it's hard to reconcile the reality that a human being can do this. So I'd like you to hear his sense of imagery in what you just heard. Gershwin playing very honestly and very openly and very well, I Got Rhythm. But listen to how he scours, this is Tatum now, scours the possibilities of sound with the same chords and the same tune. Here is Art Tatum, though we'll go into it a little later.
Art Tatum, man with a piano. Gershwin, man who wrote many a great song. Man meets song, I Got Rhythm.
That's You see, the impossible is possible when it comes to an imagist like Art Tatum. I mean, the incredible technique this man had. And you know, what you heard were hundreds of notes, perhaps a thousand, I don't know. You want to, if you have nothing better to do, you want to sit down and count the notes that he played, go right ahead and do it. But there is so much that comes out of those few measures that Gershwin wrote, all of which is sheer genius to begin with. But I think of the sense of imagery as being an instantaneous kind of reality. What about Mozart, who once said, very diffidently, very, very, you know, just, hey, so-so, he said, I can see an entire symphony on the head of a pin. Now, what does that mean? If a symphony takes 30 minutes, and he was able to envision an entire composition, as it were, on the head of a pin, could he see it in a way none of us can describe, all of it, in a sense, at once? Once he was asked, how can you do such a thing? How can you write a symphony overnight? Just take the word symphony and overnight, the question. Take Beethoven. At age 31, he had finished his first symphony. At the end of the 31st year of Mozart, he had written 35 of his 41 symphonies. I mean, talk about imagery, okay? Brahms took 20 years to write his first symphony, 14 to 20 years. Imagery takes so many different directions. So when I think of Mozart, I think of Gershwin, too, not only due to the fact that they both never got old. I mean, Mozart was in his 35th year when he passed away. Gershwin was in his 39th year when he passed away. So I think of both chronologically and musically in terms of the brilliance which changes the world of music that these two men perpetrated upon us. That's why I think of, in Gershwin's case, as the Mozart of America, the American Mozart. So when we hear, well, when Horowitz first heard Tatum play, he said, that's impossible. How can any human being do this kind of thing? That's what he said. I'm paraphrasing, but that's how he thought. I must meet this man, which was arranged, and they got to meet, and they got to know one another very, very well. And one man, you know, a dropout in high school, namely Art Tatum, and Horowitz, one of the giants of the concert field, coming out of Russia, becoming the lion of all of the pianists in the 20th century, openly admiring what Tatum could do. And you know, T for Two, the great tune, the first tune that Horowitz heard Tatum do was T for Two. That's when he said, I've got to meet this man. I've got the recording that Horowitz heard, because T for Two was recorded four times by Tatum. And I've got that original recording. I don't think I played it here on this program. At any rate, when we think of that, and where Horowitz took himself, I've got 12 seconds on video of Horowitz with a puckish smile playing his transcription, or the beginning of, guess what, T for Two, on his piano, in his living room, in his townhouse, with an impish smile, 12 seconds, it's ungodly awful. I mean, he had no sense of jazz or pop. And on the video, which was erased, unfortunately, but in truth, what happened, after about 12 seconds, there's a voice that comes, a feminine voice that comes from the sofa. His wife is sitting there, and she says, stop that. So, I mean, the question of imagery, this is really what Horowitz was questioning. How can the man see? How can Tatum see so much so quickly and do what he does with this incredible technique? There are some people who have written, I mean, well-written, well-read students of music, called musicologists, such as I am, who think that note for note, pound for pound, the piano abilities of Art Tatum transcend anybody else, including the classical, when we think of what Tatum could do. Now remember, Tatum had about 8% of vision in one eye, so he was legally blind. So he never saw the instrument the way most of us who see and play the piano can. I mean, he saw the piano in a different way, saw with quotation marks around it, in a way we can't even understand. Look at George Shearing, the great jazz pianist. Never saw the piano. He was born blind. And someday I'll tell you about an interview I had with George Shearing about the way he learned the piano. It's fascinating. And it tells us that those of us who see can't really see distance in pure terms. When you have Tatum or Shearing almost incapable of not playing the middle of each note, It's mind-boggling to consider this. Now, you know what stride piano is? It's when the left hand becomes the rhythm section in a portable orchestra called the piano. For the most part, the melody in pop playing is in the right hand. But really great stride pianists like Oscar Peterson and some of the others, along with Art Tatum, would play a stride piano at times, and that's the oompa effect on the piano, first a single note low down and then coming up on the piano with the same hand, the left hand, and playing the full chord. Eventually it built into just not one note but three notes in the left hand, followed very quickly by the same hand a foot and a half above that playing the chord. So it's oompa 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 oompa. Just imagine the left hand going that quickly from one part of the piano to another at that speed, oompa 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 oompa. Listen to the stride playing of Art Tatum. Just for 2 or 3 minutes.
Was that done by a human being?
Well, your reaction precisely is the same as towering geniuses like Horowitz or Rachmaninoff, Leopold Stokowski. How can a human being do this sort of thing? So let's talk about imagery from the viewpoint of not only the imagery that's possible in developing sounds at that speed and making them all controlled, but also what about the physicality, the physiology? Talk about athleticism. I mean, this is as remarkable as can be the case. And also, there's another aspect here, and I think the word would be investigatory. When we hear all of these passages played by Tatum, none of which are written, he's investigating, he's practicing. It seems almost as if he's learning every time he plays how much further he can delve into the world of sound. Just keep in mind, this is the diatonic system. It's been around for 400 years or more. We've been using it. It has 12 notes. We never run out of the combinations and possibilities of what we can do with 12 notes. And that's why I just had a publication coming out of Germany, my compositions for solo violin. How much can be done on four strings in the 12-note system. Bach started this, and it's still going on. So, I mean, it's just the sense of imagery, the possibility of a horizon that we never can get to. We see it, and when we get to it, it's gone and it's further down constantly. And this is the kind of thing that we hear in Tatum. Let's talk more about, and by way of listening to the next piece, investigatory involvement by what Chopin did. He wrote a series of pieces called Etudes, which means etudes is French, of course, for study. A study in the physiology, the possibility of the technology of writing for the piano and creating challenges for the pianist. One after the other, Chopin wrote all of these kinds of questions into the music he wrote. Listen to... in this case, I don't know if we're going to... Yes, we'll do Chopin. Why don't we... let's do Chopin. Am I right or am I wrong? I think I have...
You had said Horvitz.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, I have a Moskovsky etude, which comes right after Chopin, but is based upon the same kind of concept. Listen to what Horvitz does with a Moskovsky etude. Moskovsky was a Polish composer. And listen to the numbers of notes. These are patterns, but they're all written. Remember, not improvised, but written. Listen to all the notes in this piece.
91.5 WMFO Medford.
I would apologize. I was going to do Chopin, but I think I may be taking too much time. So I thought you'd hear something as an effect of Chopin's etudes on the Polish composer Mazowski, who wrote etudes, one of which you just heard. The reason I chose this particular piece over Chopin at this moment is the reality that there were so many notes there. When you think of it, it's about 11 to 17 notes per second constantly going on. And this is a sense of imagery, but of course it's frozen. This is an investigatory involvement. Tatum uses his investigatory techniques. Take, for instance, his scouring of another tune. This is called Just One of Those Things. This was done in 1956. He died only a few months after that. So he was at his powers here, the height of his powers. He did not die gradually. He died of uremic poison.